Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about quantum mechanics you can do yourself. Now, I know a lot of you've heard about quantum mechanics, but until you've actually done it, it's something you've heard about but not done. And now, to paint a picture for you, imagine that you're very sick, you're housebound, and you can hear a festival in the village, main village street, just two blocks away. You can hear the bands playing, people yelling. There's a roller coaster ride or something, some sort of merry-go-round. You hear people screaming and laughing. People come back a bit, you know, full of presents and show bags and stuff like that. And you call people over, tell me what it's like. Well, it's great. And you can sort of smile and sort of laugh with them, say, oh, gee, that fair must be nice. But actually doing quantum mechanics for yourself is like actually getting out of your house and actually walking into the area and doing it. Now, you might not be able to do something on the main stage. You might be able to just go around and have a peek at a few things and look around. What I'm saying is that if you're doing full-on quantum mechanics, I don't know, there's a lot of equations and computers and approximations and stuff like that. So if you're doing say quantum mechanics, you just put in nucleus, electrons, electron wave functions, you know, for a few atoms, and you'll get out full spectrum and all this information. You've got to know how to do it, and you've got to use supercomputers because it's the maths is not easy, and there's matrices and there's a lot of computing which goes into it. But that's not to say that quantum mechanics, the Schrodinger equation, has little cracks in it. When I say crack it, you can slice and dice the quantum, the Schrodinger wave equation. You can get the radial part opposed for the axial part. You can get the time part. So, and you can just break it up. You can get set up a situation where the time and axial part doesn't matter. So one of those examples would be a bound diatomic molecule. It's one dimension. That bound diatomic molecule, at its bottom state, it's two masses and a spring. The two masses are the two nuclei, and the spring is the fact that as the two nuclei move apart, electrons tend to flow into the center and tend to pull those two masses back together. So it's an equilibrium position. Now, as opposed to what you would imagine in classical mechanics, in quantum mechanics, you've got bottom vibration level is, if you've got a swing, you spend most of your time either at the top or the bottom of the swing. In quantum mechanics, it's slightly different. Your bottom state of swinging, you spend most of your time in the center and a little bit of time at the bottom, so it's visually almost impossible intuitively to see. But as you go up states, you go up distinct bumps, sort of like push me, and then there's this levels that you can be pushed. You can't be pushed at an arbitrary amount in quantum mechanics. So for this, I'm making an analogy between two masses and a spring and you sitting on a swing. It's very much the same type of thing. The two masses oscillate back and forth. You're sitting in a swing, you go back and forth. And there's a different way of looking at it. Now, you can be confused, but it's actually best to actually think about, just talk it through in your head, going through. Just come with me and I'll talk through. Now, like in podcasts, when I'm podcasting a recipe, I sort of relax. If I haven't understood something, I go through to check if there's a really major thing I don't understand, and then I go back and select what I'll go through. Say if I'm getting some sort of chicken curry for it. If I really haven't understood a point, this is mostly YouTube, I'll go back and forth over a section until I've understood it. And you two can do exactly the same thing. The advantage is, when you're in control, like you are in control back at home in podcast land, you can listen to the whole gamut and see whether an early bit which doesn't quite make sense makes sense when you've got the big picture. So we ain't got a supercomputer, and we do have a small computer, but Small computers are just small computers. You've really got to understand what's going on. And so I'm going to consider at a point in space, a ruler in space, a meter ruler. There you go, a meter ruler. And a meter ruler has 1,000 millimeter spaces. And that's going to be representing the a vibrating diatomic molecule, two molecules. It's two nuclei, equally weight nuclei with a spring in between. And they're centered at, well, what you can say, we're centered at 500 millimeters halfway through. So we're talking millimeters. Now, it could be picometers into nanometers, or it could be nanometers into microns, or microns into millimeters. It's, the scale doesn't matter. So the scale does matter. That's all held up in Schrodinger's wave equation, but we're throwing those units away, so we can just go. So I've got an array, and I'm going to have an array with three rows in it. Okay, just to really get your head into it. The top row is going to be top row. So there's three rows, and it's 1,000 columns across. Now, why is it shaped that way? Well, because it's left to right, and that corresponds your mapping left to right. Just the way we're going to do it. So relax and think about it. Top one is the wave function. Now, you can make the wave function complex. In this case, I'm waving my wand and saying we're just going to do a real case. So you don't have to worry about e to the it, the time-dependent section, thrown away. You can actually, a quantum mechanical Schrodinger is an equation which is just, it's one of these beautiful equations, and you can just keep on carving it bit by bit. You can carve off the time, you can carve off the radial, and you can carve off the axial, the azimuthal angle. You can carve it off in different times. So in this one, I'm just considering a diatomic molecule, which means we can just look at the radial, sort of one coordinate, one dimensional Schrodinger wave equation. We've got two dimensions to describe it. And because we're going to have, in the first one, we're going to put the wave function, which we're going to have real, so there's no worries about it. You don't have to think, oh my God, I haven't understood complex numbers. You can just relax. It does help working down and further down the track, but at the moment, it doesn't really matter. I'm not going to do conjugate wave functions and stuff like that. We're just going to forget all that. We're just going to do a wave function. Now, in that top one, the amount in that number will have, I don't know, percentages. And so, percentage of the wave function. Now, I know it's going to help that we're going to consider a particle at say 0.536 millimeters across. It will help to think of it, but in reality, and this is actual reality, the wave function is distributed. So it will start off at 0.001% at say zero, and by the time it reaches, say, 300 units in, it'll be 0.05%, and then by the time it reaches 500, it'll be at, say, 1%, and you go all the, symmetrically go across. Now, the point I want to say here is that the sum of all those little percentages will add up to 100% of the particle. So your particle, it's not a particle, your wave function, spatial little buckets that you can have, bins you can have, spatial bins. If you add it all up, it will add up to your whole wave function. So you can spread it out, you can change it the way you want, but in order to have more, if you want to build up the amount of wave function at a particular point, you have to actually go and harvest it, you know, go round to the other buckets and say, look, can you spare a bit, and it will build it up there. So it's a fundamental thing that the integral of the wave function, the sum of the wave function is 1. The particle has to be accounted for. Important point. The next line here we're going to leave blank And that will be the actual kinetic energy of the particle at that point. So let's consider if it was 100% in one bin, that would be the energy, kinetic energy of that particle. Okay, now before you go worrying about kinetic energy, kinetic energy is just the total energy minus the potential energy. So depending how you're drawing it, so in the center you may have a potential energy of, I don't know, 5 units. Actually, you've got a total energy of 5 units, and at the very center, we're going to have a parabola at the very center, 500 millimeters in, that will have 0 potential energy. So its kinetic energy there will be, did I say 5? It'll be 5. Just go across. So we're just going to skip, just in your mind, say, look, that central thing, we're going to understand it a bit later on. Rewind, but we're just going to go down to your third row, which is the potential energy. So the particle is not involved, the wave function is not involved at all. And this bottom one is just the force between two nuclei with all its electrons glued around it as a function of distance. And we're going to make that a parabola. And there's 500 units, and it'll be at 500. And so what we'll do is its position minus 500 will be proportional to its position minus 500 all on 100 squared. So let's talk it through rather than trying to get it too much. Say if we start at position 0, and that will have 0 minus 500, which is minus 500, divided by 100 is minus 5, minus 5 squared, this will be 25. And at 100 units in, that will be 100 minus 500 is minus 400. Divided by 100 is minus 4 all squared, 16. And if 200 minus 500 divided by 2, so it's x minus 500, if you got there. Okay, to get your mind in it. So, plotting out that parabola, it'll be 25, 16, 9, 4, 1, 0, 1, 4, 9, 16, 25. As it goes up, it'll be a nice parabola. That's focusing at every hundreds, and it'll be a uniform line between them. That'll be the potential energy. So, sticking in your mind, let's make it easy for us. Let's make it. Pick a particle. The particle is going to have energy 16. Now, it's not necessarily going to be where that's going to form a stable wave function. And we will discuss what a stable wave function is. It may not be an allowed energy 16. I don't know. I'm just doing this in my head. So if it's at 16. Its potential, its kinetic energy at 0, right, get your mind around this, potential energy at 16 is, at 0 is 16 minus 25 is minus 9. What? It's half mv squared is minus 9? Well, v is imaginary, and what it really means is that when you put it in, that wave function is going to be asymptote to 0 bloody quickly. Now, if we move up to 16, it will be, move up to 100, it will be 16 minus 16 is 0, divided by 100 is still 0, squared is 0. It will have no kinetic energy, rather negative kinetic energy. And after that, we'll have positive kinetic energy, having maximum kinetic energy of 16 units at 0. See if you can do it in your head. Just draw it out on the page. So I'll give you a bit of time. Draw on your page a axis, 0, 500, 1,000, starting at 25, dropping down to 0, going up to 25, and at 16, it crosses at 100 and 900. And you can see the size of just shade in the curve above the line, and then shade in the curve beneath the straight line. So it's a straight line up and straight line down, and that will be your kinetic energy, your moviness. Now, Schrodinger wave equation says the following thing: curviness, the second order derivative, that is, if you've got three cells, 1, 2, 3, it is the value in 3 minus the value in 2 minus the value in 2 minus the value in 3. So I think it's 1 plus 3 minus 2, 2. Well, let's go 3 cells, A, B, C. So the curviness, the rate of change of the gradient, is A minus B divided by the bin length. The rate of curviness is A minus B and, B minus A on the bin size, and the rate of change over that is B minus A and C minus B. So you subtract those two together, and so what you get is A plus C minus 2B on the bin size squared is your rate of curvature equals V minus E. Now, V minus E we've already put in that central axis, and we have to now just trundle along here and work out what this unit is. And now, what it means is, you can start off, you know, you've got to start off with two things. You've got to start off with a size of the you've got to start off with two things. You've got to start off with units in bin 1 and 2. You've got to put in bin 1 one unit and bin 2 two units. Right. Now, that's got a now that the way that it goes is that rate of increase. The next one, if it's got a uniform rate of increase, it will have a constant gradient. So the second derivative is zero. That's not true there. You have the minus sign in there, which is positive. Just to go through. Next one is going to step up at 1.1, so it'll be 1, 2, 3.1, and then the next one will be 4 will be 4.2, and what will happen is that the rate of increase will be proportional to two things. One is the energy deficit, which is your kinetic energy there. I have to get it in. And the size of your wave function. So if you just iterate through, just start it off with a gradient and a value, you will generate a wave function which will grow to a very large amount until it hits, the wave function will start to grow until it hits the magic point of in this case, 100, and that's when the rate of change will be constant. So it will then grow, at that point, it will grow at a constant gradient, and after that, it will slowly stop growing, if you're okay. Now, the bottom line is that this will grow exponentially in the barrier area, where it's actually classically forbidden. And where it's allowed, it will, the rate of growth will slow. Now, if you've selected an energy level which is correct and your and everything is correct, it will slow and eventually go down. And when it goes down, it will turn over. It will actually have a maximum rate of decay of gradient at lowest, at its highest kinetic energy, okay, in the center of your parabola, and it will continue to curve down, and will start to actually start to fall. It's a bit like an object being thrown up into the air. It will stop climbing and eventually start to accelerate downwards. But the rate of the wave function accelerating down will slow as the gap, as the psi walks into lower and lower kinetic energy. And eventually it will hit the barrier again where it's got zero kinetic energy, and its rate of change of the wave function will be constant. And after that, the rate of change of the wave function will then change and change signs and either grow exponentially or destroy itself exponentially, unless you can pick a magic energy where it hits the wave function, the wave, the barrier at the other side just perfectly, and it and either exponentially explodes or decays and actually goes in absolutely smoothly for a fantastic landing. So if you like it's like getting a wave function to go across a potential. It's a bit like taking flight. You take off in the forbidden area, you take off, you fly. So it's sort of like you launch yourself where you're in negative kinetic energy, your wave function grows and launches itself. It takes up and flies, and depending on your angle of approach, your fly and that you're coming in, you will actually either go, you'll be still climbing by the time you reach the next wave function, and then you'll then just fly off. When you fly into the next negative region, your wave function will fly off to infinity, plus infinity. Or if you're not coming in with enough energy, you will flip over and actually nosedive into the potential energy curve, and you'll crash, and you'll be still too high, your gradient will be too high, and you'll go to minus infinity, you'll crash. It's sort of like this ideal, like entering the Earth's orbit. You can't, there's a range of angles that you can go in. So what happens is, you run your simulation, and your wave function grows, curves over, and if it doesn't die enough, you've got too much energy, it's coming in too much, it will then hit your potential energy curve too high, and start to build and go off to plus positive infinity. If you select your energy level too low, you won't grow, you won't fly high enough, and you will hit your energy level, at your potential energy level at the other end, going down too fast. And going down too fast, it means that it will get out of control, and you'll go to minus infinity. And so if you hit plus, and if you hit up and you go explode up too amazingly too fast, you know, you don't even go, I don't know, 100 units in or 50 units in before you've just blown yourself up, you will, you know that you have to lower your energy level. But if you, and you keep on doing that, and you say lower your energy level a lot, now, if you take a big step and you've gone and you start to crash to minus infinity, so this is a hunting method of going through, and it's a sort of a boundary condition without actually doing the maths of it. It's a sort of boundary, no offense to blind people, it's a blind man's boundary condition. Like you'll have a pier, and you're blindfolded, and you're riding along that pier in your bike, and you can do it as many times as you want. You cycle along at slightly the wrong angle, you fall off the pier, the left-hand side of the pier. So you say, well, this time I'm going to change my angle, drive along, and next time you go much further before, my God, get away from me, you birds. This is crazy in Australia, all these birds around the place. They're quite intelligent and quite scary. This one's mad. Get away from me. Okay, sorry. So you're on a pier and you're blindfolded and you have to actually find the right way to cycle all the way down the pier. So you can cycle a long way down and at the last moment chip off the edge and fall off. And you'll know that I have to actually just nudge my way that I approach the pier by a slightly small angle. And then you ride for a very long time and then fall off the right-hand side. So, you know, you've taken a step too much. And this is hunting. And you will hunt and find a stable wave function. That's where you launch, go up to the top, peak at the midway, come down and just do a smooth landing on the other side. Now, on both sides, you've actually been doing a bit of quantum mechanical tunneling. Amazing. And quantum mechanical tunneling is a fiction of people who are addicted to classical mechanics. They can't think of it. My God, Father, get off me. Oh, all right. There's basically a relative of a kookaburra. Can you hear it? Man, not hear it. The sound's not there. It's quite an intelligent bird, and they're having a little. There's heaps of miming birds. Okay, I don't know if you can hear that in the background. It's quite an ugly-looking bird, sort of unglamorous like the kookaburra. It's still got some features of the kookaburra, but it's much smaller and very intelligent little bird. There, you've got a very complicated call. Okay, so you can do it yourself wave function, and this way there's no complex numbers, there's no angular momentum, there's no wave function whatsoever. It's just a computer array, 1,000 array of 3 columns in it, and one variable, your energy, and you select your energy and run it through, and you run it through such that the rate of increase, the rate of growth of your going into your third cell, your next cell is judged by the rate of growth. So the value in cell 3 is the rate of growth of 2 minus 3 with a factor for the energy at the point. So if the net energy is 0, it maintains the same rate. If the net energy is positive, the rate of growth reduces the most as we go through. And that is the most fundamental aspect of quantum mechanics. Really, you can study all these equations and study all the phenomena and learn about it. But it's sort of the fundamental, it's a baby crawl of quantum mechanics to learn how to go through. And what will happen is that you'll find one energy level and you'll go up and up and up. And what will happen is that you'll go to an energy level, which is too high, and you'll launch too quickly, crash down, and you'll crash down ahead of where there's, you'll still be in the positive kinetic energy stuff, and this will take over and actually start to glide you up again, and that will be your second energy level in which you go across. So those energy levels are not quantized, they're discrete, absolutely, they're fixed, they're a value, but it's not until you actually add a few more that you have to actually bolt the second part of quantum, bolt the full energy levels together, that you get that those energy levels are separated by something called angular momentum. You just don't have enough dimensions, one dimensions, to have angular momentum. Angular artifact, I suppose, is to get across, which is quantum mechanics. It all links together. So this way is really good fun to do. You put in a value of V. I wonder if there's an internet. I'll see if I can find something on the internet to go ahead. But even if you see it on the internet, there's nothing like actually programming yourself. So you set it up, you set up the potential energy, you select an energy, and that energy is up for you to select, and you select the energy at which it will actually rise, will launch. And so that the higher the energy, the more curvy it is, so to speak. And so it's got minimum curviness, and the curviness is the momentum, one thing. So the rate of curvature is the momentum. The psi dx is the momentum. Psi is the actual wave function, but the psi. So as you increase the energy, the curviness increases. And so the first one, it just curves, comes out of the forbidden region, just curves up just enough, overcurves and lands smoothly. Then you can go up to the next energy level. It curves so much that it goes up, crashes down, and crashes down such that it equals there. And that's quantum mechanics. I hope you can understand it. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.